Oh, not another magic podcast.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, break out the wine glasses, get your monocles, because we are talking about the finer things again tonight here on Not Another Magic Podcast. I am, as always, Jack Antonio Sabato de la Hoya, future president, Daddy 2016 hashtag, LaCroix, and joining me tonight, as always, again, is Jeff Good. But folks, before we introduce our guest, I have to say this, okay? I honestly have to brag for just a second here before we introduce our guest. It's not very often nowadays that when I see something going on in the community, I actually stop and say, holy shit, this is really, really, really cool. And I get excited about it. I mean, yeah, you guys have your t-shirts, you know, you have your podcast. Yeah, you know, you might even have your deck sleeves that happen. I'm still upset that Steven Raphael didn't get his morph sleeves off the ground. But yeah, that was a bummer, because Steve's a good guy, and folks, you should go follow him on Twitter for sure. But every now and then, I see something, and I get really excited for it. And I get so excited that I drag people like Josh Krause, the guy behind the original MTG art account, back onto my podcast to talk about it and to reintroduce himself to our fabulous listeners out there. Josh, say hello to the folks at home.
Hey, everybody.
Now, if you don't mind, give just kind of a brief overview, again, of who you are, what you do in the community, and then we'll launch right into our main topics. How does that sound?
Sure. So my name's Josh Krause. I run OriginalMagicArt.com. I am a big-time magic collector, magic art collector, and semi-decent vintage player. And I've been running this site for about 3 years, almost four. And now I'm getting ready to launch a new project that originally started as a way to support the site, and now has grown into something even more interesting.
And folks, this is what I was talking about earlier when I was talking about getting excited, seeing something that's really, really cool, and seeing something that, dare I say it, Josh, is actually quite beautiful. It is quite alluring in a way that you don't actually often see in this community. Do you mind talking about that project with us real quick?
Sure. So the project is called the Classic Art Token Project. It was initially designed as a fun way to give away something to support the site, and I wanted to create a token or something I could give away that had art on it. And so once I started looking into commissioning art, found that to be too expensive, I started looking into copyright-free or license-free images and ran into images in the public domain, specifically images like fine art from throughout history. And I stumbled upon the sites like the National Gallery of Art has a really great collection of art, and they've opened up their digital images, very high-res, high-quality digital images to the public domain, and they do require attribution, as a few other museums do, but they were one of the few museums that have opened up their vaults, which is amazing. And I found a few pieces, but the one that really stuck out to me initially was Claude Monet's Woman with a Parasol, and it was just a beautiful piece. I've always loved Impressionism. I've always appreciated art, never really knew much about our history, but I had good general knowledge. And the more I delved into the subject, kept on finding these amazing matches. Like, the woman with the parasol could have been an amazing spirit. I found an amazing knight ally. I found a slew of soldiers and warriors, obviously. Knights, tons of those. But I also found some really weird ones. Like, I found a really good hippo token, and I found a really good citizen token, and I found all these other things that would work so well. Like, you'd imagine if companies like Wizards and the idea of a collectible card game had existed 200-300 years ago, and companies had been commissioning artists to create art, that these are the type of images that they could have been creating if they wanted to make a elf warrior token. This is what it could look like if it was done in the late 1800s, early 1900s. That And it just was really inspiring, and I kept on getting momentum in my mind, and so I started looking into, well, okay, I obviously want to make this, so I started working on a Kickstarter, and now I'm to the point where the launch day is less than 12 hours away, as of this recording, going live on Tuesday, February 2nd, got tons of tokens, we got playmat designs, we got uncut sheets, I've got tons of stretch goals, working with, I sent out a bunch of review copies, like Therese Nielsen just got hers in, she's getting a quote for the project, a couple people have already gotten, put some quotes on the project, and trying to get it, some amazing tokens with amazing art out into the community.
Yeah, and I got a few of sort of the prototype ones, or the ones you had in Philly for a tournament.
Oh yeah, you had early yeah. prototypes. The initial prototypes were in the GP Vegas. I had some. I made some like 4x6x8 or like large mock-ups, and then I actually mm-hmm. got the printer to get some initial prints. And that's what you saw. Yeah. Then I made some fine-tune adjustments to the design, made mm-hmm. it a little bit better. And now I think we've got a really. I mean, everyone I talked to has had positive things to say about it. I've shared it twice on Reddit now. And they've had amazingly great feedback, and so I am hopeful that it does very well.
And see, something I was talking about with Jeff before we kind of started the call here is, not only are these beautiful tokens, they absolutely are, and I'm so glad you put the attribution on here. I know you had to, but I think it brings up a point that is very, very valid with the creation of these tokens. These aren't necessarily going to be just things people play with. This could be an introduction into art history, into some of these classic works that people may have never seen otherwise.
And it's been exactly that for me making the project. I mean, I really enjoyed art as a kid. I could never really get, like when they started asking me to do still lifes, I kind of my eyes glazed over and I went to sleep. But when I started looking into this project, I kept on running into, like, Giuseppe Arcimboldo in the 16th century created these amazing illustrations that are tricks of the eye or tricks of the mind. I'm using his elemental token, one of his pieces, which was actually the portrait of, an archduke. And he made this portrait of an archduke out of vegetables. And I have a bonus token that I'm going to use as a morph, which is just like the silhouette of a man, but it's made out of like small animals, like a tiny elephant, all these other things. So he was doing those illusions back in the 16th century, and I never knew. And a lot of people I've talked to about the project feel the same way. Some people have, just looked at them, and these are almost like art history flashcards. And yeah. to a degree, they are. I can't use, like, if all the artwork is in the public domain, they're all from license free or attribution required. So you'll actually, every piece of art has the attribution to the artist, because I want to make sure that the actual artist of the painting obviously gets credit for it. Mm-hmm. And it has the date that it was created, which in some cases you'll be very surprised at some of these artists that were creating just crazy art in like the late 1800s, stuff that I never, you wouldn't think that it would have been invented, you wouldn't have seen it until like the 50s or something like that, but these are probably the artists that have inspired those movements. And, there are some artists that, due to copyright concerns, when you're operating with the public domain, you can't, you have to work with artists that passed more than 70 years ago. So a lot of artists I would love to use, like Picasso and Dali and Escher, can't. Not for, in some cases, 40 years can we use their work. That being said, there obviously is a rich, rich history of images to draw from, and I've pulled in the best ones I could find. There are a few that, for copyright reasons, I couldn't use, but I think that the selection and the matches that I made are, in some cases, brilliant, and in some cases, an interpretation. But I've tried to make the best tokens that I possibly could, and so far everyone's agreed that they've been really, really good.
And see, what really grabs me is, first of all the art you actually took came from so many different cultures and so many different movements. We've got everything from surrealism to impressionism to photorealistic things like I'm looking through your Twitter right now, and we have the Wounded Eagle, for example. That I thought that was a photo looking at it just now.
I know, it's absolutely beautiful.
And it's just, it's insane the amount of just variance and detail that we have between all the different pieces and how they are all incredibly appropriate for what we're going into here.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I was pulling from multiple different cultures. I have an Indian piece that was done in the 17th century that is this just awesome demon. He's going to be a bonus token. I pulled a lot of, I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's Yukio-e prints as a style between the 16th and 19th century in Japan. And I pulled a lot of art from that because it's just funky and tons of samurai and all these different artworks.
One of the ones you had in Philly is a cat soldier token, which is a sort of Japanese style art with, you know, a cat that's in the kimono, and for some reason it has its like paw on the head of an octopus. It's like there's a story here. I don't know what it is, but
I kept that. I found Puss in Boots, which I thought would be a more fitting cat soldier, but I still have that one. Either to be a bonus cat soldier, or if we ever get to the point where I can make, like, in the project, I start with 48 tokens. 48 different tokens are involved in the project. If it funds, then once we hit, like, funding goal initially is $5,000, which I'm fairly confident I'll be able to hit very quickly. I mean, I'm hoping, you never know with these things, but if it hits that, if it gets to 6,000, that 48 jumps to 54. If we get to 10,000, that jumps to 72, and it goes up. And I have designs all the way up into the 150 range. So if the project does really, really, really well, then yeah, we might have like 108 tokens, 126, 150 tokens, different tokens. So if you bought a full set, you could get 150 different tokens. And you'll be getting the really obscure stuff, like a citizen token. I have a survivor token. I have a deserter token. I have a minor demon. I have
Sand warrior.
I have an amazing one for a sand warrior. I have a sand warrior and a sand token because you know you need a sand token for that one card that makes sand tokens.
Yeah.
So I have many different things, but obviously this project starts off with just the core group, ones that see the most play, are the most popular, and are the most useful. But I want to make these tokens that are both hard to find or don't exist, and I want to make them with great art.
So one question I have, so what did you use to actually, like, format the tokens and everything? Because what looks like a wooden frame around them is actually, I love that. I love that you actually added that in.
But it's actually a digital image that we bought the license for. It's actually a photo of a frame. So it is a legitimate for actual frame that someone took a picture of and put it up, and we bought the rights to it so that we can include it in the project because it looks so perfect.
Yes, it does. I have to say that is the finishing touch on all of this that I've just fell in love with.
And the printer, I mean, the printer, I'm not doing it. It's just a gloss finish on it. So you get a little bit of shine from it. And the frame itself has different lighting. So they look like they are being lit, even when they're just being lit normally, it looks like they're being lit from an angle, which is really neat.
Yeah. See, I was trying to think of all the different cat tokens out there in the game. Like, white also makes 2/2 cats, like, quite often. That's pretty frequent.
Yeah.
Pretty sure the Planar Chaos Jedit makes green 2/2 cats.
2/2 cat warriors with Forest Walk.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have a 1/1 cat from Waiting the Weeds.
Yeah, Waiting the Weeds. There's the Nikado, like, War Pride that makes token copies of itself.
Yeah, I can't make that exactly because it would reference a specific card name, so I don't really want to do that. But you have, like, the Carnivore, Tooth and Claw, I think makes Carnivore, so you can have 3/1 Carnivores, and I have an amazing piece of art picked out for that one, even though no one ever will play it or will ever need it. I have a great token made for it. So that's what I pulled from, again, museums like National Gallery of Art, the Rijks Museum in Amsterdam, the Brooklyn Museum, Los Angeles County Museum of Art, the Getty. All of those museums have, in my opinion, embraced the digital age and are fostering the public domain by providing high quality, high res images, whereas other museums are trying to be more protective of their imagery. And I see their arguments, but I don't agree.
Like what the point of being a museum is.
I understand.
I hear maybe kind of nominal license fees just to help, fund the museum, but not anything prohibitive.
But... Yeah, and a lot of them, I mean, it all depends. I found one site, Dover Pictura, which has, they're a book company, Dover Books, I think is the company. This is their digital licensing branch. And so they have scanned some of their images and made them for, nominal licensing fees, $2 an image. Now, they aren't, it's not something you can make a 6-foot by 8-foot print of and it'll be perfect, but it's, for my purposes, it was absolutely perfect. And for a lot of purposes of getting textures and things like that, Dover Pictura was a great resource. Loved it. And then sites like Wikimedia Commons, Flickr, both of those were good resources. So just want to make sure that they all get credit for the work they're doing to get those images out there.
And, I think what you're doing actually piggybacks again off of something Jeff was saying. I feel like art is something that should be approachable for the public because it's not just something pretty to look at, folks. It's something that is incredibly culturally relevant. Something I say a lot as a writer is when you look at different literature from an era or something like that, what you're actually getting is a snapshot of a whole life and a whole culture that you didn't necessarily get to live through. And with something like classic art or something as incredibly valuable as, turn of the century stuff and things like that, you get to see this entire culture that you never ever would have got to experience otherwise. And you get to see it through their art movement, through their literature and things like that. So while I do understand keeping a museum up and running, that's incredibly important. I've got to say, Josh, what you're doing here is very commendable to not only education, but to giving people a chance to experience these different movements again in ways they may never have gotten to otherwise.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is you see, when I was looking at, searching for images, and I kept on seeing artists where I could see, in the landscapes of the Hudson River School, I could see Rob Alexander, I could see John Avon, I could see in the Impressionists, I could see a bit of Therese Nielsen or Nils Ham, where things are just, they're not photorealistic, you have a little bit of contour to it. I kept on seeing a lot of inspiration you can see in the current artists, because obviously if you're an artist, you're pulling from the history, and one aspect of the public domain is these are images that have been, they are now part of the public. They are things that people can pull in and do pull on for inspiration forever. So they're always going to be with us, and you're always going to see, you can see in the, even in the progression of the artworks chosen here, you look at the earliest Leonardo da Vinci's, and I looked just in my searches, I looked for things earlier than Leonardo da Vinci, and you could see why some people, or a lot of people, say Leonardo was kind of a turning point in European classical art, because you had a level of perspective and musculature and detail that you just, it didn't exist before he did. And after that, you just saw a completely different approach, and they never went back, which is good, because he was revolutionary. He was amazing. I'm glad that I was able to include multiple pieces. I couldn't resist not including the Mona Lisa in there somewhere. So that's my illusion token.
Mm-hmm. Now, speaking of Da Vinci, there's got to be a Da Vinci Thopter in there, right?
Yes, he is my Thopter.
All right, that's that one. It's too obvious.
And there were two candidates in Da Vinci's notes that he had a flying machine. He has, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but he had one that was kind of a corkscrew design.
Yeah, there's the corkscrew sort of helicoptery thing.
Yeah, and then there's one that actually has flapping wings.
Yeah,
the flapping wings was, but one problem with the corkscrew thing is the image itself is just a scribble. It's tiny. So all of the scans that you see of it just massively blow it up, and it doesn't really doesn't really blow up well. But the Thopter one was a larger, larger drawing, so it actually looks really, really well, really good on there. So I included his warrior. He actually made a warrior in armor, So that's my warrior token. Mm-hmm. He made a,
Like, he's known for his horses, too.
He had some really great horses, but I couldn't figure out, like, what a good, like, you do, like, a knight, but you don't have a guy on the horse. And there are, I guess I could make a horse token, but nothing uses a horse token. So, I don't know. There were a lot of art that I ran into that great piece of art. Don't exactly know what to do with it.
Hmm.
So I have a list of art in my, like, when I was gathering all the art together. And
public domain slush art.
yeah, basically. Where,
if I could find a place to it.
And then I worked with a designer to make the design. My Photoshop skills are enough to make rudimentary things, but Bonnie Brunderman. She used to work on the Magic the Gathering website. And so she, took all my ideas and all my rough designs and focused them into what you see now, which is a much crisper, image. And the project would not be in any way as good as it is now without her.
So was there any of the tokens you felt like you had to make a stretch for? And I'm sure there were plenty though where you were just like, aha, this is it, right?
Yeah, the many, it was just perfect matches. Lifelink and Death Touch Worms are a bit, because you want to hit that duality between life and death. And I found a really interesting, illustration of two harpies that were like, one was black, one was white. They were like right next to each other. So they kind of married up art together, which I really liked, but I couldn't find a good image for. And also harpies with worms didn't really make much sense. But I did find these series of illustrations, that I think they were biblical interpretations, and they had these angels with the balls, these large globes, and so it looked funky enough and fitting enough. Like, you could say the globes are the worms, you could say the angels are, like, I don't know. I had to stretch a little bit for that one. But the art itself was beautiful, so everyone I've talked to is like, yeah, these are a little funky, but the art's really nice. So, but yeah, there were a couple that I had to reach a little, my zombie token. It's technically a skeleton, but it's a skeleton smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Here's the question though, like, when did, like, is it possibly just a thing of, like, the giant worm being a thing? Sort of in the cultural mythos?
Well, you had it, like, going back to the story of St. George and the Dragon, that I could find art all the way back to, like, the 11th century.
Yeah.
They were doing illustrations of St. George and the Dragon.
Like, worm and dragon sometimes meant the same thing?
Yep, worm and dragon sometimes did, but it wasn't until, really, Dungeons and Dragons that they codified it into dragon is flying, worm is dragon minus wings, sort of thing. Giant, scary lizard dragon thing. And so I found, like, a good mix. And the size of the dragon, you can track it through history. It just got larger. It looks like a fishing story. The dragon just got larger and larger and larger. And eventually it became its own thing.
Do you have a series of different sized dragon tokens?
I have multiple different dragon tokens. Yeah. I have.
Cause, like, the Broodmother makes one ones, doesn't she?
1/1 Flying Devourer 2. I have a 6/6, a 5/5, and a 4/4.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's all of them. I don't think there are any other dragons. I have a dragon spirit. I think I have a dragon spirit for Tatsumasa.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that's all of the dragons. But I've got most of them. There are a couple that I couldn't find a match for, or are so incredibly, I would say they're so incredibly odd, but at the same time, I have a wood token. I have a wave token. Things that.
Well, wave token's obvious. I mean, what do you use for that?
But no, it's not. No, the wave token has actually been eroded into, it's just a 5/5. It's, okay, here you go. Here's the quiz. What card makes a wave token?
Master of Waves, isn't it? No, it makes elementals. That makes elemental. Gosh, I'm dumb. No, it's one from Time Spiral. God, I remember it. It's
not from Time Spiral.
Oh man, they're no, yeah, because that created an illusion. Okay, I'm out. I don't know what it is.
I think I know what it is. I think it's from a Mirage. Mirage Revisions.
It may be from Mirage.
Doesn't it also get like flood counters or some or tide counters or something?
I don't believe so.
No.
I believe it's just a. It just creates a 5/5 wave token that has Defender, and it dies at the end of turn.
I feel like I've played with this card.
It's very possible. Tidal Wave.
Just Tidal Wave.
Yes, I have that one. Yeah, I have played with that actually. That card's awesome.
Yeah, and so like you have a lot of different things. Like I have a weird token. Now, the only thing that makes a weird token is okay. What makes weird tokens?
Tidal Wave was from Mirage, by the way.
Okay, good.
Tokens, you said?
Yes, weird tokens.
I know they were kind of a thing on the plane of Ravnica.
Yes.
This is on you, Jeff. I'm out.
Okay, name a card.
Yeah, I'm out on that one. Yeah. I'm just thinking of like the guild pack ones that you had the
it is,
color things. But...
It is guild. I believe it's guild pack. It's an Izzet card. Yeah. Thunderheads.
Oh yeah, Thunderheads.
So you have all of these things, and there are a lot of different things that you have. Like Hour of Need makes Sphinx tokens.
Yeah, I was going to ask what your Sphinx token is, because I bet that's of a particular interest to my esteemed co-host.
And oh, I have a beautiful Sphinx token. I have a perfect one, but I mean, it's on my long list of tokens. It's not going to be. It's going to be on a later stretch goal if it makes it into the project because it there's only one card that makes it. It doesn't live past the turn. So I kind of put those on a lower priority to the different tokens that are available. So I have a ton of them and I want to make them all, but I can only make them a certain time. But it's really interesting. Every time I share the project, everyone asks for like these random tokens. Like everyone wants a Kobold token. There are only, what, two cards that make kobolds?
Yeah. That's popular in certain crowds, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but I was really surprised at how popular that one was. So that one's going to be early inclusion. But
I think also people just try to name the weirdest token they can think of, just to try to find one that you haven't gotten yet.
and they sometimes do. Like, I have a piece of art picked out for my twin token, but I do not have one currently built. I have a poison snake, I have many snakes. I have lots of tokens. Right?
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, yeah, because like snack basket makes snakes. Sorry, yeah. Snake basket. I always called it snack basket.
Yeah. I have poison. The serpent generator makes the poison snakes.
Yeah.
And you have lots of things that make just 1/1 snakes. A couple things that make I think 1/1. Farika makes 1/1 death touch snakes.
Yeah.
They're also enchantments, but I'm not bothering with the additional subtypes. I want to make sure that they are, I mean, one of the things whenever you're dealing with a product that works with Magic, you want to make sure that you are not, you're working with the Wizards IP. So I didn't want to tie everything to Magic. That's why you don't see things like enchantment creatures. You don't see things like, what color they are. I wanted to make them more generic so you can play them with other great card games like Yu-Gi-Oh! Mm-hmm. Epic Card Wars, I think it's called. And just to make sure that it was differentiated between the official product so that I wasn't infringing on the work that they put into their product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Actually, that means you kind of don't have to differ. Yeah, if you're not noting color on anything, you know, the difference between the 2/2 cat and, you know, white or green doesn't really matter, so.
Right. Yeah. And so, I avoided, like, I didn't bother with making, adding haste as an ability, because it only matters one turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most things, they don't keep the haste, it just says, like, they gain haste until end of turn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Playmats are all going to be, done by Ink Playmats, and the designs are already on the, Kickstarter page. I start with 5 different designs. They're all from art that is, like, there's a token for the art, as well as the art being used on a playmat. I was lucky enough to find some really great images in the right format, to just that same landscape format. And the designer came up with a really good approach to them that breaks the art out of the frame, so you get to see it in a little different way.
Do they have a border on them? Like the border that looks like a frame?
Yeah, it's a border that looks like a frame, and it's kind of, it's a little like darkly tinted around the border, and then you have the border itself, and then the art breaks through the border.
Nice.
And also has the attribution so that everyone knows who the artist was and what the name of the art is. And it has my the project logo and then the original Magic Art logo.
Is there a backing to where if someone's like, I want this obscure ass token that only I want, that would be like literally the 150th token that would make it into the set? Is there a level where they can be like, make that damn token?
Not specifically, but
There should be.
Well, yeah, I guess that would have been everybody gets forced to have this token.
Yeah. Or just, you know, we just put them at the top of the queue, you know.
It's definitely an option. Obviously, I have a basic set of token, which is 18 of the more popular tokens. I have token collections, which is 48, but eventually 54 tokens in a collection built specifically. There's a standard collection, there's a modern collection, a legacy collection, and a vintage collection. I'm working on a stretch goal that if we are able to do better than, I think the goal is $12,000, I'm going to add a commander collection.
Yeah.
If we do much better than that, I might add a cube collection. It's like a good collection of tokens to be in a cube.
I think cube probably is going to cover... Like, I don't think there's going to be much that's cube playable that doesn't make it to the vintage playable.
It all depends. It's just like quantities. Like the vintage one, you're never going to need a beast token, but in your cube, you might have Gurik Wildspeaker and need beast tokens.
Yeah.
Possible. Or you'll be playing Beast Within or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the vintage collection is specifically targeted. And so you have a lot of monks, you have zombies, you have one-wad elementals, have four robots in case you need robots, because I can't use mirror. And so, and then you have the full set, which will grow as we add more tokens to the project. You have a level that is just for a playmat. And then you have a bunch of different combination deals. You have one that's a playmat and a full set, one that's a playmat and a token collection and a basic set. Then you get into ones that include uncut sheets. And then you have, I wanted to make sure that it's customizable as much as you want, so that if you want to get a full set, but you absolutely have to have 20 Drake tokens, then you can add on, you can get a full set, and then for $1 a token, you can add on 19 Drake tokens. So I wanted to make sure that it's anyone that's back in the project can get exactly what they want token-wise.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And you can also add on additional full sets and token collections and all sorts of things.
So, Jeff, I know you're itching to talk about Vintage Artists Constructed as well. Come on. This was the one topic you wanted to bring up.
I did get to talk about it a lot on the Will of the Council podcast, which I guested on, with Zeki and Brian, a.k.a. Inky Scholar, who I think both have guested in some capacity on this cast. I know Brian was on the Christmas episode. I'm not sure if Zeki's actually been on.
I don't recall, actually. We need to get him on at some point there.
Hmm.
Yeah. Let him talk about his dual life as Clark Kent.
Yep. talked about a bunch about it with them. We can talk sort of more advanced stuff, because like, this isn't a primer to it. This cast, we've talked all the way up and down that format.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking at a stack of cards that I recently got on Puka Trade. They're all pretty cheap, but have an artist in common.
Okay.
I don't know, do you want to have you try to guess what artist I'm...
Oh, yeah, let's try it. Let's test my knowledge.
These cards are green and white.
Okay.
One of them is a 2-drop from Oath of the Gatewatch.
Oh, okay.
One of them is a 2-drop from Magic Origins.
Okay.
One is a 5-drop from Born of the Gods? That's like a promo that's foil. We got a green and white 6-drop from Return to Ravnica that's a mythic. That should tell you something.
Wait, what was that last one?
A green and white 6-drop mythic from Return to Ravnica.
Oh, that's not in a Tandris.
She was Dragon's Mage.
Return to Rabbit.
Seven. Yep. We were talking about this creature type, too.
Six drop.
Yeah.
Man.
It's the two drop from Oath, though, that's got some buzz in Standard. That's sort of why I put these cards on my list. So I'm like, that card's kind of good. And it's like, oh, that artist was just a little short on like good early creatures.
It's not Therese Nielsen.
Nope.
Green and white. It's not Kev Walker. Can't be. It's not Eric Deschamps. Steve Belladin?
No. Yeah, Deschamps didn't have anything in Oath, but he's gotten a truckload of stuff in the past few sets, including one Mr. Gideon.
Yeah, yeah.
Who is every bit as good as advertised.
Yeah, I remember you stomped my deck with the Deschamps deck. That thing is so many, I mean, Planeswalkers is just so hard to deal with.
Yeah.
Very few decks can deal with it. I'm gonna say you stumped me. I'm gonna say Steve Belden, but I know I'm wrong.
The card is Sylvan Advocate, and it's Vulcan Baga.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So,
did you get Relic Seeker? Does he have any?
Yeah, Relic Seeker is the white two drop I was looking at. Which,
okay. Does he have anything to actually search up?
He does have an equipment that's not very good, but.
Okay. I thought so.
But still, like, a 2-2 Renown is fine.
No, it's not bad, yeah.
And the Advocate being, like, a 2-3 Vigilance for 2 is a great body. Forest is the basic that he has.
Okay.
So having it in green is a bonus.
He's got Seaside Citadel, he's got Marauder's Wake. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the other lands are, it's Temple Garden, Citadel, and Halimar Depths to get your Bant colors.
Oh, okay.
To go with a
Forest. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Armada Worms Good Times. Oh, that's the six drop.
That's what it was.
Yeah. We're talking about worms. And, the weird five drop is Hero's Bane. That's a Hydra that has 4+1+1 counters and 4 mana you put that many more on it, basically.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah, and it's like in the Hydra's in a forest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like a fun deck.
Yeah.
What removal does it have?
Oh God, I don't know. It's got dudes. That's the important part.
Okay. Because I know that's one reason I like the Therese Nielsen deck, because she still does have the swords.
Yeah.
And 4 swords, while not too many, you got Eternal Witnesses and a couple of things to recur them with. Yeah. But that's great. I heard the person that you were on the podcast with was really interested in a Therese Nielsen fairies deck.
Oh, yeah.
Becky wants to build fairies, yeah.
And all of the fairies that she's actually done are amazing.
Yeah, I mean, Bitter Blossom, Force of Will, that's a good good place to start. And didn't she do Rebecca Gay did a Spell Setter Sprite.
Yeah.
That's too bad. That would have been perfect.
Yeah, but Therese is good. So Baga also, Vulcan Baga did Snapcaster Mage.
Oh, wow.
So when I was looking into this, I was like, oh, he's got Snapcaster Mage. What sweet instance does he have? Fuck all. But, we get to stretch a little here, but he's gotten a few. He's got an FNM Anticipate. Like, that's a real card in this format.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. That's a good card.
Digging for what you need. It's 2 mana instant to snap. Got one of
you would require double blue though. You only have what, 8 blue sources?
Yeah, but hopefully if you cast it once and it helped you find another one.
That is true.
You got another one in Oath, which is a Grip of the Royal, which is a tap target creature, it doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step, draw a card.
Okay.
Which has surge, so when you snap it costs less.
Nice.
So the things that are going to be tough with this deck are Snapcaster, which fortunately I've got a couple already, and would probably be fine with just 2. It doesn't need the full set of theirs.
Yeah, I mean, the mana is going to be pretty rough.
Yeah. Because also, like, he's got Map the Waste to go search up basics, but Forest is the only basic he's got. No. There's a couple other things. He's got Original Elsbeth. Love me an Elsbeth. Edric Spymaster of Trest. Like, that was part of the reason why, like, I was like, oh man, cheap creatures to go with Edric. That's what he needs.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, because everything else was just like, oh, all the 4 drops you could ever want.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the artists have that kind of those gaps that they're looking to fill. And I'm still waiting for Jeremy Jarvis to fill his promise for Kev Walker. I mean, once Kev Walker has a Plains, he is unstoppable. You could just run a deck that all it is just Wrath and Debtor's Knell. That's all it is. You just Wrath from turn 4 to turn 7, and you just drop Debtor's Knell and you win.
Yeah, so another, the other card that's a bunch of money for it, which, I'll have to save up for, and, probably find some excuse to play in another format, and that's Mox Diamond.
From
the Vault Relics Mox Diamond.
How much are those going for now?
About 41.
Okay. Cheaper than a Snapcaster.
Yeah, he did Mox Opal, which isn't, I don't think you could make work. I don't think you could just do opals and diamonds and put that together. And, I mean, you could play that shitty equipment, the Shield of the Avatar.
Oh, that's what he meant, Shield of the Avatar?
Yeah.
Oh.
Which doesn't, like, make the creature kind of hard to kill. But that Mox Diamond is the one way you have to actually cast Siege Rhino.
All right, now guys, I have a legitimate question since we're talking about prices and everything, okay?
Right.
Has there ever reached a point with your vintage artist constructed decks where you seriously may have thought about actually buying the real piece of work? Like, is there a specific deck that either you or maybe somebody else in the format has built where you're like, I might actually have been able to afford my favorite piece in the entire deck for this?
I bet Josh owns one already.
Right? Well, I mean, I can make a vintage artist construct. I think I can make an entire vintage artist constructed deck out of art that I own. But I can make a cube out of the art that I own. I have a lot of art.
That's awesome.
I was gonna say, like, you went to research this format. You just went to your collection of art.
Well, yeah, like, when I first started collecting, you get those, like, silly ideas of, hey, let's just make a deck out of the art that we own. And so I made a deck out of art I own, and I continued getting more cards, and now I can make most of Legacy Elves. Most of it. I don't know the paintings for all of them, but I own, like, the painting for Nettle Sentinel, Skull Clamp, Heritage Druid. I have the sketch for, I have one of the paintings for Natural Order, the one from Portal. I have a sketch for Gaia's Cradle. I have a sketch for Craterhoof Behemoth. I have a sketch for, what's it called? The Wirewood Symbiote. I have the painting for, it returns a forest to untap a creature.
Corian Ranger.
Corian Ranger. Yeah. And I have a
the fact forest. That I know that off the top of my
head. Yeah. and then some things I can't, some things that don't exist in physical form, like, Green Sun Zenith was entirely digital. I have never been able to find the artist that did Glimpse of Nature, and he only did very, very few paintings or very few pieces of art for Magic.
Just Kamigawa.
Yeah, so my guess is that he is entirely digital or somewhere in Japan and we'll never find him. But yeah, I have a few things. I do. And yeah, one of my goals when I started collecting again, once I started picking up more, like, you know, my silly goal was to have 360 pieces of Magic art so that I could build a cube. And I hit that mark, hit that mark last year, around February, or not February, around like November when I picked up a bunch of sketches from beginners. So I have like a sketch for Survival of the Fittest. I have a sketch for, and that's the thing about when you're a Magic art, when you're a collector, or when you tell someone you own 360 pieces of Magic art, they think that you own all of the alpha paintings and you're a millionaire. It's like, no, I own maybe, and I own a lot of paintings. I own like 50 paintings, which is a lot, but most of my collection is sketches, and most of that stuff I paid $20, $30, $40 for. Yeah. And if you look at someone's Magic collection, like, you know, that's sketch, nothing.
Sketch of rando draft common. Like, not super high demand.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and some of that I got in early enough that I was able to pick up a lot of the sketches that were very, like, I have the original Sword of Fire and Ice from Mark Zug and Sword of Light and Shadow, and I was able to get in early enough that I got those at reasonable prices, because when people, like, in my history with art collecting, I got in initially in 2006, and the market was, it was fair, and then the stock market crashed, and everyone started liquidating things, and interest in Magic art kind of really hit a low, And I got back in around 2011, 2012, and things were just starting to pick up. And then I started my site, and a lot of people became interested in it, and it's gradually grown significantly since then. So where I was picking up paintings for, like, I bought the original for Ill-Gotten Gains for a friend for $250. And
that's a striking piece.
It is. It's a very striking. It was a beautiful piece.
Mm-hmm. They used it in a lot of advertising, I remember, too.
Yeah.
Like some full-page magazine ads.
It's a great, great piece of art. And that was only $250 straight from the artist.
Oh, wow.
And now, if it went on the open market, it'd probably be 10 times
that.
Well, and so just getting in early always helps.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a moment, because magic art appreciation, thanks to you and a couple of other people in the community, has actually pretty much exploded over the last couple of years. It seems like I can't go a day on Twitter without actually seeing somebody post something. How has that affected the secondary market for magic? Has it gotten higher on a lot of things? Or, I mean, well, predictably so, I think.
I think that the secondary market for magic is seeing a lot of the same level of appreciation. Think of as the different formats gain interest, things spike. 93-94 is a great example. No one cared about, I mean, very few people cared about making sure that you had a playset of 93-94 cards in case you wanted to play the format. So once people started to get interested in it, you could see stuff like Stormworld spike from $5 to $50 or more now. I don't even know what exactly the market is. I've stopped paying attention, and I'm always surprised to see how much things are worth now. And you see with misprints and miscuts and even artist proofs, you're starting to see some appreciation. I think that it's just a general trend inside the collectible market of magic itself, simply because I started playing when I was 13, 14. I'm 34 now. I have more money than I was when I was 13. And I like to capture those little bits of nostalgia, or to play the game that I enjoy in a different way or with a different deck. And sometimes, since Magic is a collectible game with, in many cases, very limited quantities of play pieces available, you're going to be paying more and more for those pieces. So I think that Magic Art is, I've always thought, even when I first bought my first piece, I've always thought Magic Art was a more unique item than many people realize. In that these images are burned into our brains. We played with them for years and decades. And so each image has many memories attached to it that you wouldn't be able to see because you're never going to have the card on display. You're never going to have the card just lying out. But if you had that piece of art on the wall, you're going to remember all those times you top decked that to beat that guy or lost to that card or drafted it and windmill slammed it or whatever. You're going to have all those memories attached to it. You're going to have all those great times playing with it. In some cases, people spend the time and the money to track down the really hard stuff. Nick Detweiler, he's a really, really great member of the vintage community. He's the one that got me interested in Magic Art again when I heard about his search for Karn Silver Golem.
Mm-hmm.
And his search for that initial piece has turned into one of the finer collections of Magic Art that I know of, simply because he's able to focus his efforts. Like when I first started, I was indiscriminately buying everything that I thought was underpriced or a good value. And so that ended up with me getting some really great pieces at really great prices. It also ended up with me getting some pieces that I'm not really as attached to, that don't really have that much significance to me, that in some cases I've found better homes for that really appreciate the piece. Whereas he has been very selective and saved up to go after the bigger pieces. So that's how he got Morphling. It's how he got many of the members of the Weatherlight crew. He had Squee. He had Lynn Sivvy for a while. So it's kind of different approaches to the hobby. And were I to do it over again, I think I'd hedge more towards his approach But at the same time, the frenzy of and excitement of finding an artist, finding out his pieces of available art and buying multiple pieces is hard to replace.
Nice.
Well, so, gentlemen, do we have anything else we want to mention right quick?
Oh, I did want to answer your question from earlier, which is the removal that Vulcanbaga has, which besides that Isaac creature draw card, which doesn't really count, Sunlance.
That's damage.
Yeah, it's kind of it.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He did a promo of Washout, which is one of the comics.
Yep, I remember that.
Yeah, bounces all permanents of the chosen of the color of your choice.
Okay. That could work. I mean, you're going to see more mono and double color
Vintage
Art structure decks than anything else. So that could be a really good card.
Yeah, it seems powerful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Vintage Art Constructed has been. Yeah, the format. I'm so glad, Jeff, that you've kind of taken up the mantle with me and Mike Linneman and a few other people trying to spread the word about the format, because it's just a fun way. A different way to enjoy the game. You pay attention to things that you otherwise wouldn't.
I always say, man, spoiler season has changed forever.
Yes, absolutely. you are looking at that bottom left more than you ever have or will again.
Yeah, it's like, oh, that waste thing. Raymond Swanland did that waste?
I can play a deck now? I can now play Wormcoil Engine?
And Ugin?
Yeah.
Not much else, but
yeah. If you could combine him with Jason Felix, you can have a pretty mean deck. Or whoever did who did the new 4/4 for 4 that removes like the Vendilion Click?
Oh, the Thoughtknotseer.
That's what it is. Yeah, if he had that, that would be really helpful. Get him that. So they had assigned him that and Reality Smasher. I don't think you'd need anything else. Yeah. So, talking about Vintage Arts Construction, I know Mike Linneman, Orthos Mike on Twitter, is going to be running, or at least I've heard that he's going to be running a Vintage Arts Constructed tournament at GP Minneapolis. I'm going to be attempting to run something at GP Portland, and so that's going to be in August. And I'll probably, if I'm able to make it to Gen Con, I'll probably run something there as well. But it'll be, I think last time it was just me and three other people, so it'd be great to have more people than that, but we'll see how that goes. And then I know we'll try to set something up for Eternal Weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, anything else East Coast, like Toronto's going to be a big deal. I don't know if I'm going to make
it. I also have heard that Toronto, I know a lot of the heavy meta crew are trying to make it up there, and they're always a lot of fun.
It's
crazy
it's also
to
like,
hang out with.
It's the first face-to-face GP. And, like, KYT is basically in charge of planning a lot of it.
Yeah, I know that they have been.
At least sort of the extracurriculars.
Absolutely. That is KYT. Yeah. That is what he is doing. So I know that he is really involved with that. So I'm very excited, to see what they do with that.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he takes my advice and makes sort of like the mana deprived party, like just an official part of the GP. So I think that's a step that those need to take.
Yeah.
This is going to transition a little into something I want to talk about is a couple jobs that Wizards posted recently. One of which is the super boring title, Manager Premier Play Business Operations, which has a bunch of kind of boring sounding stuff. But one of the job description things is this position will work closely with a global cross-functional team to set the professional tournament organizer PTO strategy and reinvent the business model of the Grand Prix in order to allow scalability.
Huh. Interesting. Well, that makes sense. Well, I mean, you have all these GPs, and if they do, it would be great. My hope for that position, my hope is what they mean by that is we want to turn GPs into conventions, or at least many conventions.
That's corporate speak for turn GPs into conventions.
Because if they did that,
like,
I mean, I loved Vegas. Yeah. Vegas was amazing. It was better than any other GP that I had been to. And I think one reason is because it was not just a tournament. It was a tournament. It was side events. It was artists. It was vendors. But it was also, it wasn't just vendors. They had the meadery was there. Legion Supplies. They had all different sorts of like community members and things like that. So I mean, it'd be great to have like a podcasting section.
Mm-hmm.
where the different podcasts out there would have booths or something like that, just to be able to focus members of the community. But that's interesting.
Yeah, turning GPs into conventions is, I mean, I think Vegas showed them that that's where it has to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, me and Mike have both been sort of, like, pounding our shoes on the podium about, you know, we gotta convert these things. Like, they're still just, like, too focused on the main event of the tournament, and they're very spiky. There's not a whole lot built in structurally to appeal to the other psychographics. And that's kind of, like, they've always been handled as kind of an organized play thing, not, like, a big community building thing. And, like, I think there's a limit to how big the actual tournament can be, and I think we've been seeing that.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, just because, like, the cost of space and the, like, that doesn't scale linearly, and, like, just the demand for an actual big long tournament, like, when that reaches a certain size, it, like, becomes less and less practical. But we're also, like, we're not getting the real attendance totals for these events. Like, we're getting, like, people who registered and showed up for round one.
Yeah, they're not getting, like, any turnstile counts or anything like that, so they don't know exactly how many people are doing side events. I guess they can look at the number of side against that fire, but...
Yeah, internally, like, they probably have, like, every DCI number that gets registered for an event there.
Mm, true.
But, they're still, like, I've been to GPs that I didn't register for a single event for. Like, yep. I showed up, like, Sunday at New Jersey and, you know, just hung out with people for a little bit. And, you know, hit up, you know, a couple artists who were there and, you know, talk with people. Like, that's all I did there. Didn't, you know, play a single fucking minute of Magic.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I can count the number of days that I've played Magic on, God, one, maybe two hands if you include online for the last year. So, and I love Magic. I read about it every day. I consume content, but I have less and less time available to play it. And I'm sure that's true of many players.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean we don't love the game as much. But, I mean, we would still, like, I would love for them to have, like, a Vegas style event every year. Why don't I just make it Vegas every year? Or, I thought that they were going to do, I don't know. I know that if they do Modern Masters 2017, they'll have another GP Vegas and it'll be amazing.
Yeah.
But it would be great.
There's rumors of an Eternal Masters set.
I have heard those rumors. I am very interested to see that. My hope is that they recognize... My hope is that we don't see another Kamigawa Dragon Cycle. That they just go, whatever.
Yeah, the Mythics...
We will... Yeah.
The Mythics have to just be balls-to-the-wall, like, constructed staples.
Absolutely. And it has to be just like, we are going to balance this set on the commons and uncommons. The rares are going to be Wasteland. Fetches. They're going to be things that people want. Snapcaster Mage. Things that need desperate reprints. Yeah. Things that we can reprint that haven't been reprinted. Imperial Seal. Mana Drain. All these things that they just need to be reprinted.
Yeah.
And my hope is that it happens. My thought is that that is not what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because they have a different plan. They always do. They think that if they space it out to, if they give us 20% of what we want with Eternal Masters, and then give us 20% of what we want of Eternal Masters 2018, then I think that that's probably what the approach they're going to take, because it's going to be, that mirrors much more what we saw with the Modern Masters. But I think that they need to be much more aggressive with reprinting, especially if we're going to see less reprints without a core set. We're going to see, I mean, the Commander set had
nothing. Last one was a bit light on sort of constructed format staples.
Absolutely.
Like, there's some good stuff in cards. There.
Well, they were great. I think that the most recent Commander sets were great for Commander.
Yeah.
But, and I can see why they'd want to avoid things like True Name Nemesis and Flusterstorm, simply because they greatly impact the Eternal formats maybe more than they were expecting. But at the same time, I don't know. I'm a vintage player. I like that they print things specifically for the formats, and they change the formats in unexpected ways. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, one of the fake formats I've talked about, never actually built for, would be a a format where you can only play cards from those sets that have new cards but are, like, sort of eternal only legal. Like the Commander products, the Plane Chase, Conspiracies, all that stuff.
That would be very interesting. That would be an interesting format. Yeah,
they look weird. Weird format.
Multiplayer central.
Yeah, there's a lot of sweepers available.
Yeah.
And not a lot of good aggressive creatures.
No.
That's something I was noticing. I was like, oh, this format might actually just be garbage the more I look at it.
It's definitely an interesting idea.
Commands. Okay.
But let's see. If it's Eternal Masters, and it's going to be released at the same time that Modern Masters is. When was Modern Masters released? It was released in May, right?
Yeah. May or June, yeah. I think, like, the release date on those has kind of varied a bit. Like, Modern Masters came out, like, middle of May, but, like, Conspiracy was more like middle of June, so.
It's possible. Middle of June could work.
Like.
Honestly, they should just make Conspiracy 2. That thing was so much fun.
Yeah.
They just need a Conspiracy 2 and make it heavy reprints for the rares.
Yeah. There's something I was observing that, like, the Expeditions we just got, I think they did kind of a test run of those online in Vintage Masters.
What, with the Power 9?
Yeah, like, the way those were distributed is really similar to the way Expeditions are distributed.
Possible.
Like, you know, sort of more rare than Mythic Rare.
Yeah.
And are, like, super, super chase, super premium. Like, I wonder if they might do something like that in, like, a Conspiracy-style set.
I could definitely see it. Honestly, I would not be upset if they did it every other set or every other block. Every block. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Even every block, you have so many things that it's just free money.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yes, as with any Magic player, you can give them, Wizards could print $100 bills and they'd be upset how they're folded. But it doesn't matter because eventually you open up your foil Expedition Snapcaster Mage. And you're like, oh, sweet, I just paid for my box and a half.
Yeah, and imagine if they were like, the card frame that I actually kind of love the most is the Game Day promo card frames.
Oh, like, yeah.
They're not textless, but they just have, like, just the piping of the color lines.
Yeah.
Like, those.
Yeah, I know.
Especially since, like, M15, those look gorgeous.
Yeah, really good. Josh, the Proxy guy.
Yeah.
He does a lot of mock-ups. Like that. I know that's one of the mock-up templates he uses. And I agree. I think that the Expedition format that they used is much chunkier and clunkier than they needed to make it, and it would have been much better as a Game Day version.
Yeah. But I get that they wanted to make those look like they wanted them to fit the plane and kind of look like Zendikar. That's cool.
Either that or just take out the text altogether. Yeah. Make him unglued.
Yeah, but it's still something that any player can open.
So yeah.
I get why they've got to leave text on. Like, they've said they've stopped doing textless cards. They just.
Especially since you can use them in draft.
Yeah. Like, if an 8-year-old can open it in his pre-release, it's got to have the rules text on.
Yeah.
I had this is kind of unrelated. I had an interesting thought on a way they could get around the reserve list. I think it's something you could also do. It would open up some other design space, and that would be printing oversized cards.
Like, yeah, but they wouldn't be tournament legal then.
Well, except they then become their own format. Like, you could design an eternal format from the ground up without any of the baggage of, like, the legacy that we have now.
Yeah. I mean, it's possible.
Like, if you wanted to reboot Magic, I think that would be a really neat way to do it.
Yeah. I mean, if they were going to reboot Magic, but I don't see them doing that anytime soon. It would be interesting for them to say, like, if I were going to redo the reserve list, I would just make snow moxes, ban moxes, and go from there. Snow Black Lotus, make Black Lotus, make it vintage legal only, ban Black Lotus, make Snow Black Lotus, because
Icy Lotus.
Yes, Icy Lotus, yes. Snow Lotus. And it is not a functional reprint. Snow is different from non-snow. And then just ban the card in Vintage, if he really wanted to do it. But I just don't see them risking it. I don't see them as seeing the need to do it, because sure, people will buy it, start playing Vintage, Legacy, but they'll buy it once. And then they will have abandoned effectively Modern. And I do not see them abandoning Modern anytime soon.
Nah.
Not when Modern Masters did so well.
Yeah. And it's a cash cow. They figured it out.
Yeah. But no, I'm really excited if they do make additional Masters, because, I mean, I love Legacy, I love Vintage, and anything that allows people to play that format more, and more often, more readily accessible, I'm a fan of. So I really hope it's true. I have my doubts. But I'm usually pessimistic when it comes to, like, expectations from Blizzards.
Yeah, well, it's just they're slow moving about those things. Like, it takes them a year or two to...
Yeah, I mean, their development cycle now, I mean, one of the reasons why the game is so interesting and so interactive in some cases is because they now have a much longer development period, and they're much forward-looking. You saw with sets like Innistrad, it's just the design was there, the top down was there, and you saw that with even Tarkir. They were able to plan that out so well in advance, and you didn't see that.
There's so much creative going into that set. I think that's why we're returning to two sets, is to give creative some time to, like, really, really sort of grind on the next plane we're gonna go to.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting, because you're gonna have Innistrad, which is, who knows what's gonna be happening there. Some people think Emrakul's gonna be there. I don't think Emrakul's gonna be there, simply because we just had Eldrazi, and they usually tie into the storylines using Planeswalkers. I don't think that'll tie in. It's possible. Anything's possible.
Yeah. I mean, they have been trying to do, I think, a little more of sort of those Planeswalker through lines, sort of, that the Planeswalkers are the thing sort of transcending the block story. So having some of that kind of come with them, I could see happening.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. I am interested to hear or to see where they go after Innistrad. They can't return to another plane. They better not. It would be great to see a new vision. Like Tarkir, I think they did really well on the whole storyline. I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, the different clans were really well fleshed out, and I think
absolutely
something Rosewater sort of talked about in his sort of year in review was that they had done those so well and then destroyed them. Like, they just left another plane in ruins.
And so I think that it would be great to see they could go back to, like, a Mirrodin-esque theme by going to Rigatha? What's the...
Yeah, Rigatha.
Chandra's Rigatha.
From...
You got a little bit of that steampunk, artifact-heavy area, which they could do, and they would, that'd be a very interesting plane. They could do a multi-plane block. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's stopping them from doing multiple planes at once.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what they've done in core sets, so...
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like they would do, if they did that, I think they would do something a little more like Lorwyn Shadowmoor, where they limited it to two planes, where, like, you know.
Oh, true. Yeah.
The big sets on this plane and the little sets on this plane, something like that. Like, so, speaking of those, like, Vrain is another candidate.
Chase's
home plane. Which we don't really know a lot about.
No, not much at all.
Yeah.
They're like Thopters.
More Thopters.
The creative, they've done a great job. Fleshing it out. Zendikar, I think that has been interesting. I think I liked the previous Zendikar storyline more. This one, the super friends got in together to kill all the Eldrazi. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Was it, Ugin said not to kill the Eldrazi, so they killed the Eldrazi. It'll be interesting to see what problem that creates. I'm sure it'll create some sort of problem. Like,
they basically do the opposite of what Ugin says.
Of course. The Phyrexians will invade now.
I think that's how they can show up on other planes.
Who?
Like, the whole reason they were on Zendikar is that they were got trapped there. Otherwise, they don't give a fuck about planes. They can traverse between planes.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the long way, kind of like Reapers in Mass Effect. Like, we just fly takes us forever. We just fly. Don't care. We're ageless. We're eternal. We're unknowable. So, also, kind of speaking of creative, another job posting I saw on Wizards was actually Magic Art Director.
They have multiple. I mean, it could be that they are opening up a new section. I know they have Cynthia Shepherd, they have Mark Winters, Jeremy Jarvis. I don't even know if he's listed as an art director now. I think he's like senior art director or something like that. They could just be adding on another one because they have more products than ever. They've got two dual decks every year. They've got a commander product every year. They've got a two whole blocks and more than likely another set somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And they may also be doing more art for the board game. I don't even know. They might even be doing art direction for Magic Puzzle Quest. So I think that they just the amount of art that they need to commission and deal with and control is astronomically higher than it used to be. And also you have an art book. And that making an art book is not a small project. Mm-hmm. Making sure that everything is set for that, working out concept art. Cause now you're sharing your concept art. And so you can't just have concept art that is sketches. You want to make sure that it's a finished product for a book. So just additional work that they need to be working. So could be someone's getting replaced. I haven't heard any news like that. But it's great to see if they are getting another art director and they're expanding the team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know Cynthia Shepherd did art direction there. Yep. She's done some fantastic art.
Amazing art. One of her pieces, one of her unpublished pieces won a Spectrum Award last year. And she's an amazing talent. And it's great that she's working for Wizards now. And she's still doing commissions. Just like Matt Cavada, when he was working for Wizards on the creative team and making art, she's an art director and making art, so it's great to see. Now, who knows if her, because the art that she's getting published in, Oath of the Gatewatch, she created probably before she started working there. So they're probably still, I don't know if she's getting additional commissions. Usually once an artist starts working for Wizards, it's kind of hard to get in contact with them.
Yeah, neat. All right, well, we should wrap it up. I did want to just mention briefly, I got to play actual Magic, because we talked about not playing much, and I actually played Legacy at F&M.
Wow.
My local store does Legacy F&M, and I was playing a deck that I've mentioned here, which is an idea that I've had since they printed the Titan Cycle in M11, and that's to Shallow Grave them, particularly to Shallow Grave a Primeval Titan and get four lands.
Oh, wow.
So that's what it's based around, is Primeval Titan, Grave Titan is the other one that just gives you such a big payoff, even if you only get to, attack once, you get 4/2 zombies at the end of it. And I was trying out a couple things that are kind of honorary Titans in that regard, and the Thragtus and Mere Battlesphere. Both give you pretty good lasting rewards.
Yeah, it's not bad. But, how do you fill your graveyard? Do you use mulch or do you go blue for Compulsive Research or red for Faithless Looting?
Well, Entomb is the primary one. I've been running Putrid Imp, but I've realized I think I need to replace that because I don't want to give my opponent the ability to bolt it in response to Shallow Grave. You just get the top creature, and that'd be bad.
Yeah, definitely.
So I got to replace that, which might be either Raven's Crime or Funeral Charm, one of those one mana. Just target player discards a card that doesn't care, just because you can throw those at yourself.
Yeah. Cabal Therapy?
Yeah, it's got... See, the other thing is it's got Therapy and Thoughtseize already.
Oh, okay.
So, it's got some redundancy there. And I've had Faithless Looting in it just because I don't have all my Entombs yet. But once I've got all my Entombs, and the third one's on the way, and I've got the points for the fourth, and it could already be here by the time this goes up, then it's... I get to cut red and add white and play Sun Titan. And that's when things get really fun.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you get you play some of the enchantment reanimators, you play Animate Dead, get some of that nonsense. You get to reuse Wastelands that you tutored up, reusing Horizon Canopy just to draw cards. So you get this super grindy aspect to the deck, because it's also part of the reason you do Titans is so that after you hit one Primeval Titan, then you just hardcast everything. Your graveyard doesn't hardly matter.
Of course.
So, the idea is that, like, when you, if you get into one of those, like, sort of heavily disruption, like, disruption heavy games that happen in Legacy, where, like, really, if either player keeps a disruption heavy draw, your hands are going to be reduced to nothing and you're going to be top decking. Like, I had that happen against, like, Tin Fins, which is kind of the grown up version of the deck I'm playing.
Right.
To put it not so kindly, but, you know, they kept a hand where they didn't have a reanimation spell and just kind of went after my hand and took the one, or, you know, the one that I had. And we spent so many turns just, like, drawing stuff. Like, they thought seized me and I had, like, 5 lands in hand at one point. It was really bad. And they just, like, couldn't draw useful stuff either. You know, I was lucky they didn't, like, hit, like, Brainstorms and Fetch Lands to get extra, you know, to just dig faster, but...
Of course.
I eventually got myself a Grave Titan before, and was able to kill them before they could get me, so... Like, that's where, like, that sort of strategy pays off.
Now, Shall of the Grave, that exiles it, right?
Yep. Unless you sack it to Cabal Therapy.
That's true.
So that was fun. So I actually beat the Tin Fins deck, which I didn't think I'd be able to do. I thought the more combo version would just beat me. But the other game, they were one life short. They needed to reanimate a Children of Corliss to gain back a bunch of life they'd spent drawing cards with Grizzlebrand, and they but they were down to one life.
Yep, wow, that's that's great.
Yeah, scrape that out. And the other match I won was against Dredge, which is dirty filthy, but I was able to hit... I lost game one, but I brought in my Bajuka Bog and got to Primeval Titan before I could go off. In both games 2 and 3. So that was lots of fun, just that I got to play.
Josh, do you have any other places that people could maybe take a look at you or poke you? And, you know, hey, once the Kickstarter goes live, we want a link, mister. We're going to put this in the show notes.
It'll be live by the time this is up, for sure.
Awesome. Yep.
So let's start off. Okay, so the Kickstarter, I actually registered a domain to go directly to the Kickstarter. Obviously, you'll be able to find it on Kickstarter, Classic Art Tokens. I also registered the domain www.classicarttokens.com. So if you put in that in your browser, that'll take you directly to currently the preview page. That will redirect to the actual project page once it goes live tomorrow.
It'll be linked in our show notes. If you actually go to mtgcast.com and don't just get us through a app subscription.
Awesome. I'll be sharing it on my website, originalmagicart.com. I'll probably have a little widget in the side that'll have a link and show the progress of the project. I have a Thunderclap that is going out. I've never used Thunderclap before. I've seen some good things from it. We'll see how it actually goes. But it's just another way to get a bunch more people, and I'm really happy. I set a goal to get 100 people signed up. And we got 151 people, 125,000 people reach. So that's amazing. Wouldn't have been able to get there without people like Howard Lyon, Proxy Guy, Noah Bradley.
Yeah, I've seen it. Like a bunch of artists have been broadcasting that stuff. So
yeah, I would definitely have been. I've been using the relationships I've been building over the last few years to try to get some. But every artist I've talked to has been really supportive. Therese Nielsen is really, really excited about the project. So I am. Very happy to hear that. See, I'm on Twitter at OriginalMTGArt. I have a Facebook page for Original Magic Art. Technically, I'm on Google Plus and Pinterest, but I don't really do much there. I think I had a Tumblr at some point. I think they deleted it for me because I didn't do anything on it. But, those are the main things. If you ever need to contact me, there are contact forms on my website. Or you can reach me through Twitter, Facebook, any number of things. So that's all I got. Kickstarter, if we can, my hope, my goal, obviously is to get funded. If we can get funded in the first 24 hours, that would be amazing. I did get confirmation from Tularean Community College. The professor has my review, I sent him a full set of tokens and a playmat. And he is reviewing them and should be posting the review soon. So hopefully I get a good grade on that, because I know he's really honest with his reviews, and I'm really hopeful that he likes them.
Speaking of him, have you guys seen the videos he did with Aaron and with Christine Sprankle?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He continues to innovate, and it's amazing. And so I'm great. Really and, happy that he's doing that.
Oh, I don't know the name of the cosplayer who was Nyssa for that video, but they were great.
Yeah. I've seen the Nyssa one. I saw the Chandra one. I think I saw the Liliana one. I have not seen the, what's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Gideon. I haven't watched the Gideon one yet.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen all of them either, but. Also one where, the upset parent comes in to talk about, like, their kid being taught dredge in school. Aaron does a great job.
Yeah.
Where do you want him to learn about it?
Jeff, where can they reach you?
I am at LoGuppy. The cast is at Not Another MTG. You can email us notanothermagicpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks as always to Professor Elemental for letting us use his music for intro, outro, incidental, stuff like that. I'm not sure if I actually plugged that he had an album come out in December called Ape Quest, which has much more of a story format to it, where he goes searching off for his apish butler, Jeffrey the Ape. So that's awesome. It makes it a little harder to use those tracks. There's fewer of them that fit neatly at the end of an episode, but hey, they're great anyways.
Hey man, story raps are the foundation of good hip hop.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're good stuff. And also just kind of random shout out to at @shemehay, @shemehay. Someone who sent me some cards on Puka Trade and sent them in like a greeting card. With like a nice note included that like, you know, so they clearly had like read my profile and stuff. And she also like streams on Twitch and is on Twitter and stuff and just seems like a cool person. So random shout out. And also another M that we should shout out is, Emma Handy of Card Confidants.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Emma is somebody I've known for a. Yeah, and she's somebody I've known for a really long time. Emma was actually one of the people that got me started playing competitive Magic when that was still a thing I did. And she was a very good mentor and friend to me over the years. So to see her not only place 9th at a recent SCG event, mm-hmm. but actually get on the SCG front page, that personally meant a lot. Yeah, like that personally meant a lot to me.
I think she got like 26 this past weekend, so which is, you know, not as good, but still better than I've ever done. So. A pretty respectable finish.
Yeah, and I can say from personal experience, if you folks are looking for a great writer with a lot of heart, or if you're looking somebody to just casually talk to about Magic and how to be a better player, Emma is definitely it. She is just wonderfully approachable and a good person, I've got to say. So, with that said, yeah, you can read Emma's article definitely on Star City Games, but stop by cardconfidants.com where you can not only hear this podcast, but read Emma's older stuff that she wrote when she was writing for us. I'm not sure who she's going to be writing for now, but I told her she always has an open seat in our house.
Anything they won't take.
Yeah, well, the thing I always tell people is, look, we encourage you to go after the money. Like, and I do, like, listeners at home, if you're apprehensive about working for us or anything, we don't believe in exclusivity. If you want to go write for somebody else, cool. If you have something you want to write about that can only be read on Card Confidants, bring it to us. We'd love to work with you. But yeah, you can read her stuff on here. You can read my stuff.
I probably have an article going up on Mana Deprived by the time this goes out. So we're looking again, re-examining mana bases with Oath of the Gatewatch.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, that'll be great. Yeah, Jeff, you better pimp that stuff when it comes out.
I think I'm actually more proud of the graphic I put together for the title of it. Like, for the header. Which is a Diamonds Are Forever. Where I took like the old James Bond movie poster and sort of threw some wastes on it and kind of had to recreate the way that it did sort of the forever kind of repeating into the background.
It's a little visual thing that I enjoy doing. Awesome, yeah. But yeah, if you want to reach me on Twitter, I am at Jack LaCroix. I'm extremely not safe for work. You've been warned. And I'm also running for president under the Daddy2016 hashtag. So hit me up there if you would like to see me in the White House. Coincidentally, it only costs $10,000 to be considered a legal write-in candidate in North Carolina. So, you know, you want to see your boy making some moves? I'm open. I'm up for that. I am totally cool with that. You can also email me at jack@mtgcast.com. And Josh, I gotta say, it has been a delight having you on. I know I've been silent most of the episode, but getting to talk to you about art and just the enthusiasm and everything you share for the MTG art community is amazing. And I wish we had more people like you. And I mean that sincerely.
Hey, I just want to thank you for having me on the call. It's been great talking with you guys. And thanks for letting me talk about the project. And I'm really glad to hear that you guys like it so much. I tell your friends. That's all I can say.
The more
the more people we can get involved, more backers we can get, the higher the support goes, then the more tokens I'll be able to make. And I really want this to do great for everybody.
Well, I will say, if the project gets funded and it becomes a runaway success, we have to have you back on. So clear your calendar, mister.
I will. That'd be great.
All right, folks. Anyways, this has been Not Another Magic Podcast. Tune in next week when hopefully I'm not under the influence of cough suppressants and, I don't know, we'll talk about something. I might rant about Animal Crossing again. Good night, folks.
So, Josh, have you found a way to fit any art on tokens in that, that has, like, just big old dicks on them? Like, I know there's some classic art, like Greek and Egyptian art, that just has
egregious
phalluses.
I forgot what piece it was, but it's the devil with the dick in the wheelbarrow, like, moving it around. Oh, gosh, yeah.
No. I haven't been specifically searching for that.
I'm going any beast token.
I've run it more female full frontal than male, but
you need worm tokens.
There you go, bam.
Yeah. I'm gonna go look at like some of the ancient Egyptian like Horus and stuff that have just like huge dongs like stretching across the sky.
But I will say that there's one piece that I've had multiple requests on that I will not put in the project, no matter how many people ask about it. Which is The Tale of the Fisherman's Wife.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
Yeah, I'm not going to have octopus on women on a token.
It's so obvious.
You can do whatever you want.
But Josh, it's culturally relevant.